Okay, we're going to start here at the Mishnah on Bedim and Aleph. Masechta deals with the Parsha of Arachin, which is a Parsha towards the end of Sefer Vayikra that discusses a table of payments based on the age and gender of an individual. And those payments can be accessed by saying, Erech so-and-so or Erki Alai, somehow making a donation, a promise of donation to the Mikdash based on the phrase of Erech. And that's what the first Mishnah is going to speak about. But then the Gemara for the first 2.5 daf is going to deal with the word kol and nothing to do with necessarily Arachin. And then we'll come back later on in the Perek to deal with the Arachin themselves. Maybe we'll discuss a little more about the Arachin when we get there. The only thing that Tosafot notes over here is that, as opposed to Nidarim and other items where you make a Neder or Nizirut, that you speak about Hekdesh or promises, where you use Shem Shemayim, when it came to Arachim, it says, Shalom, you must scream Shem Shemayim al Arachim. They didn't use the Shem Hashem when they made promises about Arachin or to pay Arachin, that the Shem Hashem was not involved. So that's a slight difference or nuance between Arachin and other types of Hekdeshot or Nidarim that one would make to the Mikdash. Now we start with a kol, Marichin, Vinerachin. Anybody, and that's the word kol, is going to occupy the Gemara, because as always, when the Gemara sees the word kol, it says there must be more to than meets the eyes here. It's going to give us information, but a kol means everything, even more than what's written here. And so they're going to search here, as well as throughout Shas, every time the Mishnah uses the word kol, what's the additional item being added by the word kol? So we're going to start with hakol marichim and erachin. The word kol modifies everything in the Mishnah. So it's not just the word marichin, but it's actually modifying marichim, erachim, nodrin, and nidarin. All of those words are modified by hakol. So first of all, kol marichin, anyone can donate the erech to the mikdash. That means that they can promise to bring to the Mikdash the Erech of themselves or of someone else. Bakon Nerachin means that anyone can be assessed. Over here, not assessed in the sense of their true value, but assessed based on the table that is found in the Torah. So then there's a kol Nodrin Vin Nidarin. So over here, Neder, in distinction to Erech, deals with the true value of the individual. One can be Noder, what's called Damim, the value of an individual to the Mikdash. And over here again, akol nodrin, anyone can promise and offer to bring up the value of another individual or themselves to the Mikdash. Then akol nidarin means that anybody can be the object of such a neder, that you will bring their value up to the Mikdash. So that's the statement about both areas, both erech as well as neder. One dealing with the tables set out in Sefer Vayikra, one dealing with the absolute values of the individual. In both cases, we say that anyone can promise to bring it, and anyone can be the object of such a promise. Kohanim, Levim, V'Yisraelim. That's basically the framework of Klal Yisrael, Kohen Levi Yisrael. Then Nashim, V'Avadim. Sometimes you would have thought that Nashim V'Avadim are excluded. Here, Nashim V'Avadim are included. It says, Nashim and Avadim are Chayavim. Well, they are not independent entities. Nashim and Avadim are either subject to a Baal or to an Adon. They either are part of their master or their husband's household, and they do not have independent ownership from those individuals. How can a woman promise to bring Erachin or Neder? She doesn't have independent ownership of her money in order to do such a thing. So Rashi says, Umishlamim lachar zman, that this becomes an IOU to the Mikdash, that after they are divorced, or widowed, or nishtachler eved, or the eved is freed, then that obligation will devolve upon them. I mean, they have an immediate obligation, but they can't discharge it. Only once they are then made into free entities can they discharge the obligation, and we write a document right away indicating that they have to do such. That's one possibility. Tosafot brings that down. Inami gives a second way that it could be, is that one can gift an eved or a woman monies or objects that they will own independent of their husband or master. So because you can give a woman or an eved independent ownership, if it's specifically gifted that way, with that independent ownership, they can pay off such a promise. So those are the two ways that you can have it come out. Either it's after they are separated from their husband or their vow, they will be obligated to pay what they had promised earlier. Or if they have some sort of form of independent ownership while they are still married or while they're still an eved, they can use those monies to discharge their obligation of the promise over here. Now, tumtum ve androgynous. The kinds of Tumtor and Drigonos, which we dealt a little bit with in Bechorot, they will come up again here, is Nodrin v'Nidarin. As far as taking a neder, they can take Nidarim, because we said before, Kohanim, Levim, Israel, and Nashim, they're all within that realm of making Nidarim. V'Nidarim. And they also can be the object of a neder, because they obviously have value. The problem is by Erech. Because by Arachin, they are Marichin, they're able to promise to bring the Erech of someone else to the Mikdash. Avalo Nerachin. They themselves cannot be the object of a promise to bring Erech to the Mikdash. She'eno Nerach, ala zachar vaday, unikeva vadayit. One of the requirements to fit into the table of Arachin is that you're either a zachar or a nikeva. You have to be one or the other, and you have to be a vadayit. Zachar vaday, or a nekeva vadait, you can't be a safek. So we've seen before that there are different possibilities within tumtum and androgynous. One possibility is that they're safek zachar unikeva. Over there, they really are either a vadai zachar or vadai nekeva. It might be that we just don't know that. Or maybe that's enough to ruin it. We have another opinion, which is priya bifnei atzma. It's its own entity. There, for sure, they would be excluded from the Parshat of Erachin. The Gemara will get back to deal with this issue of Tumtum and Andrigunus. Cheresh, Shoteh v'Katan. Cheresh, Shoteh v'Katan are a series of individuals who the Mishnah uses always as examples of people that lack dat, of people that do not have the mental capabilities to do things. Cheresh being someone who is dumb and deaf. Cheresh of their time clearly had no way to communicate and no way to deal with that disability. Obviously today, and there are many tshuvot written about it, where they do have the ability to communicate and to overcome the disability, obviously a cheresh would not be within that category. Shuteh, someone who is not of full facilities, and then a katan is a minor. So all of them are nidarin v'nerachin. They can be the object of a neder because they have value, and the tables in the Torah also assign a value to ages starting from a month and above. Aval, but from the other side, lo nodrin, they themselves cannot take a neder, velo marichin, b'vein she'im ben dat. They don't have the capacity to make promises that are binding, because they are not mentally fit to do such. So that's the Mishnah. First question of the Gemara is, hakol marichin, anyone can be marich, latuye mai, to come to include what? So latuye mufla samuch lish. So come to tell you that this application of marichin is not limited to people who have come of age, but rather, even someone who is a mufla samuch lish. Mufla and samuch lish, two different issues. One is samuch lish means he has to be near of coming of age. Bar mitzvah is 13, or for a girl it's 12. A year before that, they are considered to be samuch lish or samuch lisha. So it'll be 12 years and one day for a zachar and 11 years and one day for a nekeva. That's called samuch lish. Number two is mufla. Mufla is a term that is used by the nazir. Ifla means that you're able to articulate and understand the articulation of your neder. So you can express the neder and understand to whom the neder is being made and what obligations it entails. So that's a mufla. So you need these two qualifications in order for a katan to have his nether be binding. He has to be a samuch lish within a year of reaching of age. And mufla, he has to be able to articulate and understand of the nether or the implications of the nether that he's making. So that's what the kol comes to include with regards to marichin. Hakol nerachin. Again, I said before in the Mishnah that the kol modifies everything in the Mishnah. So kol nerachim letuye mai. What does that come to include? Letuye menuval umukashchin. So these are people in their society who would obviously were sidelined, that they were considered to have no value, because mukashchin, nobody wanted to come into contact with, and the nuval, someone's disgusting, somebody was not within the mainstream of society, so they lacked value. So why would you have a havamina that they shouldn't be included? I understand when it comes to neder that you might not include such individuals, because they have no value in mainstream society. Nobody would want these individuals. And the way we determine the value of individuals is the price they would fetch in the open marketplace for slaves. So if you put them up in the marketplace for slaves, nobody would purchase such individuals. So they are worthless in terms of nidarim. But when it comes to erech, erech is not based on your true value. Erech is simply based on your gender and your age. So why would you think that when it comes to nerachin that you would exclude these individuals? So that they're going to explain. So I would have thought Neder be'erkecha k'tiv. The term that's used by Arachin is neder. And the word neder is also found in Parshat Arachin. So I would have thought, kol she'yeshno b'damim, anybody who can be included in damim, meaning that a neder can be taken about them, they can be the object of the a neder assigning value, yeshno be'arachin, then they can go look up in the tables of the Torah and be included there. B'chol she'eino b'damim, any person that does not have inherent value, eino b'arachin, doesn't have an inclusion or is not included in that those tables that the Torah lays out. So here, since they are worthless in terms of an object of a neder that says whatever their value is, I'll donate, they're valueless. So maybe too, when it comes to arachin, their value, the fact that they're valueless also affects their fitting into the tables of arachin. The Kamash Valon from our Mishnah is nafshot. The Torah says by arachin that it's nafshot, kolduhu. Doesn't matter. As long as you're alive, you fit in the tables of arachin. Has nothing to do with your true value if you were sold in the shuk. Has to do simply with the fact that you're a nefesh. A nefesh is sufficient to bring you into that category. Nodrin. So again, the kol in the Mishnah modifies nodrin. What does it mean, a kol nodrin? Le'tu'emai. So the Gemara says, nothing. Nidarin needs to recall. Kol nodrin, we don't need to include anything, but we need it for the nidarim, the object of a neder. Nidarim la'tu'emai. So now the Gemara was, okay, so kol nidarim, what does that come to include? Ilia tu'ye tumtum v'adrugnius. If you're going to say it's coming to include a tumtum v'adrugnius, v'hejik tani lohu, they're explicitly mentioned in the Mishnah. We already have that also explicitly addressed in the Mishnah. If we're talking about less than a month old, the tables in the Torah of Arachin only deal from a month and above. But in terms of value, you could deal with in terms of value. That the Gemara says, that's already dealt with. Not now, but an upcoming Mishnayot are going to deal with that issue head on. V'atuye oved kuchavim. Again, it's a deal with someone who's not Jewish. Behedja katani lohu. Again, upcoming Mishnayot are going to deal with these issues head on. So that can't be what's being addressed over here. Gemara turns back and says, "Leolam v'atuye pachot mibed chodesh." It is addressing this issue of less than 1 month old. What about the fact that it's mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah coming up? V'tani v'hadar mefarish. So the answer here, and Rashi explains this in one of two ways. Either, which is very common in the Mishnah, the Mishnah will tell you a general principle, and then it will explicate the principle by giving examples or going into more details. So here, that's the Gemara's suggestion. And the one possibility is that, even though Ben Chodesh will be dealt with later on, nevertheless, the Mishnah first talks about it in a general sense, and then it comes back and addresses it specifically. And if you do say that, Rashi points out, then it doesn't just have to be about Ben Chodesh. That could be Oved Kuchavim, that could be Chereshot Vekatan, it could be Tum Tum Vandroginus, can be all these individuals, even though the Mishnah comes back and addresses them head on because he's giving you the general, and then coming back and addressing each of these issues individually. So that's one possibility of explaining it. The other possibility is that it's unique to Ben Chodesh. And that, Rashi explains, is the Chalchi Stama Bereisha, Ashmina Mishnah Yitero. This is actually a Mishnah Yitero, Tafiul Rabbonon. Heched Amar Damav Alai, Yesh Lo Damim V'Notein Damav. Because we actually have a Machloket coming up in the Mishnah, about a pachot ben chodesh with regards to arachin. What is the din by a less than 1 month old when it comes to arachin? Because the Torah only starts its tables from 1 month and above. 1 month to 5 years is the first part of the table. So less than 1 month, what do you do if a person says erech of so-and-so and that child is less than a month old? Machloket chachamim and Rabbi Meir in the upcoming Mishnah. So why would they address it over here? That's what Rashi points out, that Ben Chodesh is only a machloket when it comes to arachin. But when it comes to nidarim, when it comes to damim, less than a month old also has damim. And therefore, even the chachamim would disagree with regards to pachot mi Ben Chodesh, with regards to arachin, when it comes to nidarim, if they're the object of a neder, there they will agree that they have value. And that's what a kol nidarim comes to include. And therefore, it's particular to Ben Chodesh, not to the other items that we mentioned. So those are two possibilities that Rashi offers up about how offers in order to explain this line in the Gemara. All right, now the Gemara is now going to take a tour of Shas and go to every Hakol in Shas and ask the same question we just asked on this Mishnah, which is, if Hakol comes to include something in all these issues, what is it coming to include? Now, truthfully, every Gemara, when it deals with that Mishnah, talks about it in that spot. Here we have an arachin, we have an aggregation of all these Mishnayot Rishas, where it really goes through every single Mishnah and asks, Hakol, 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 what does it mean in each of these contexts? So the first one is, Hakol Samchim, everyone can do smicha. What does that mean? Anybody can do smicha. Right? Smicha on a korban. Anybody can do it. What does that come to include? Latuye yoresh. That comes to include an inheritor. An inheritor who's obligated to bring the korban of their parent. They have to do smicha or can do smicha on the animal. Udelo ki Rabbi Yehuda. And that's against the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that a yoresh ain't no somech. We'll actually bump into it in a second. Rabbi Yehuda says a yoresh is a not somech. Akol memirin. Anybody can create tmura. We'll get to that shortly. That's the next masechta. But anybody can create tmura when it comes to korbanot. Le'etuye mai. What does that come to include? Again, le'etuye yoresh. Udeloki Rabbi Yehuda. It comes to include an inheritor who's going to bring the korban on behalf of their parent, who they've now inherited the korban from them, and they're going to bring it on their behalf. They cannot make tmura according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Chachamim, he can. And therefore, a kol memirim is le'etuye yoresh. So in these two cases of smicha and tmura, we say that the kol comes to include a yoresh. Ditanya, we have a brighter. Yoresh, sumech, yoresh, meimar. Pretty straightforward. The Tanakhama says that a yoresh who's bringing a korban on behalf of the person they inherited, most likely the parents, then they are sumech, they do smicha on the korban, and they can create tmura from the korban. They have enough ownership or balut over the animal to create tmura. Yudomer, yoresh, eno sumech, yoresh, eno meimar. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees on both of these points. My time with the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason of Rabbi Yehuda? So the reason of Rabbi Yehuda derives from the Parshat Shlamim in Sefer Vayikra, in Perek Gimel in Sefer Vayikra, says, V'im sevach shlamim korbano. You can bring his korban shlamim. In the Torah, in Parshat Vayikra, there are actually three korbanot shlamim you can bring. There's from Bakar, which is the cattle, and then you can bring it from the Tzon. Tzon subdivides into two categories, into keves and to eiz, to sheep and goats. So the Parsha Shlamim is actually repeated three times over there. When it repeats the Parsha three times, each time when it writes it, Rashi claims that the word Korbanot is mentioned three times. It happens to be that it's not true. There isn't the word Korbanot three times. Tosafot addresses that. We'll mention it in 1 second. But it says there in the first Parsha, when it talks about the Bakar, V'samach yado arosh korbano ushchato petach omoed v'zakub bnei Aaron hakohanim et adam mizbeach saviv. So next to the word V'samach, it says arosh korbano. So korbano is a miut. Korbano velo, and then we have to fill in that miut. Again, in the next parsha, by tzon and keves, you have a repeat of that, because it means imin atzon korbano, and then it says v'samach yado arosh korbano. Shachat toto lifnei omoed v'zakub bnei Aaron hatomo mizbeach saviv. So again, you have the word korbano, which would be a miut, samach, korbano, but not something else. The third time the parsha is mentioned, with the ace over there, it says, v'samach yado al rosho. Shechat oto lifnei omoed, v'zaku bnei Aaron hatomo, mizbeach saviv. Over there, it does not mention korbano, but rather only rosho. So Tosafot, he says, al gav chorfei, from the strength and the brilliance of Rashi, he just quickly wrote down three korbano, but it's not true. It's korbano, korbano, and then rosho. And rosho functions the same way. Because what's rosho over here? It means rosh korbano. So therefore, it's either korbano, korbano, and then rosho. Or, the parsha is full of the word korbano all over the place, just not attached to smicha. So it says, maybe we'll just take one of those other korbanos and use it. One of those two reasons. But then you have three korbano. So now we have to exclude from them three items. And that's what the machloket between the chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda is about. So my time in Rabbi Yehuda, korbano, velo korban aviv. It says korbano, and that comes to exclude the korban of his father that he brings on his behalf. V'yalif, tchilat hekdesh, misof hekdesh. And we're going to learn out the beginning of hekdesh from the end of hekdesh. End of hekdesh, masof hekdesh, yoresh, eno sumech. Smicha is at the end of hekdesh. Meaning the process of hekdesh, the beginning is when you're makdish the animal. The end is when you're actually makriv the korban. So over here, smicha is towards the end of hekdesh, and that will affect af tchilat hekdesh. Tchilat hekdesh is being makdish the animal, and the possibility of doing tmura, exchanging that hekdesh. So now I know this information by smicha, I'm going to apply it to tchilat hekdesh, I'm going to apply it to tmura as well. So just like by smicha, the yoresh is excluded, so too, when it comes to tmura, the yoresh is excluded. Therefore, yoresh, inu meimar, rabbanon. Well, they have a ribuy by Pashat Tmura, which is Hamer Yamir, the Rabot et Yoresh. The double lashon of Tmura comes to tell you that by Tmura, a Yoresh has the ability to perform Tmura. V'alfinan sof hekdesh mitzkilat hekdesh. They're going to work the other way around. They have the limud by tzkilat hekdesh, which is Tmura, and they're going to apply that to sof hekdesh. So matzkilat hekdesh Yoresh meimar, the Yoresh has the power, is empowered, has enough balut to exchange it. Af sof hekdesh, he'll have this enough power to be Yoresh somech. It'll be able to do smicha. V'rabbanan high karbano of delay. What are they going to do with the word karbano? They have to exclude something. We buy a lay. They need it for this. Three times again, the word karbano. Karbano, velo karban, oved kochavim. His karban and not the karban of an oved kochavim. Karbano, velo korban, chaveiro. His korban and not his friend's korban. Karbano, larabot, kol balei huvarim, lismicha. And the last karbano comes to teach you that if you have a korban shlamim that is brought to shutafut, that you have five partners who bring a korban shlamim together, each one of the partners has to do smicha on the animal. One person can't do smicha on behalf of all the others. It has to be every individual does smicha because they're all the balim of the korban. So what we have here is korbano, not the korban oved kochavim. We actually dealt with this extensively in Zvachim and in Menachot about the exclusion of an oved kochavim, meaning that oved kochavim is allowed to bring nedar and nedava, which is the shlamim and an olah, the mikdash, over there. If they don't bring in the nesachim, we fill in the nesachim for them. But the question would be, does the Kohen perform smicha on behalf of this oved kochavim when it's brought up? The answer is no, that he doesn't. Or we don't have another Jew do it on his behalf. There is no smicha on a korban oved kochavim. Korban chaveiro, that's only the balim of the korban can perform smicha. You can't have a shliach perform the smicha on your behalf. It has to be the owners of the korban. And the same thing applies by balei chubarim, which is that if you have joint ownership of an animal, we don't say that one person represents all the shutafim. It has to be that each one of the shutafim does smicha. So those are the words korbano, the three times. Again, the third time, we're not sure if it actually says the word korbano. It might be rosho. But those three times are what comes to exclude. V'Rabbi Yehuda, the rabot kol balei chubarim l'smicha lately. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't believe that's true. Rabbi Yehuda believes that when it comes to the balei chubarim, one person can represent the whole shutafut. One person can do smicha on behalf of everyone else. V'inami, the other possibility is itle. He agrees with the chachamim with regards to shutafut that everybody has to do it. So then, what does he get the extra korbano from? Ovei kochavim v'chareiro mechad kranafke. He learns out Ovi Kochavim and Chaviro from one pasuk because they're the same thing. Both of them are saying it has to be your karban. You can't do smicha on someone else's karban. It doesn't matter who that someone else is. Whether that someone else is a fellow Jew or whether it's an Ovi Kochavim, either one is excluded. So you can exclude that from one pasuk. So then for Jaretuluhu Atrei, then he has left over two, Chad Karbano Velo Karban Aviv, V'Ivya Acharabot Kolor Balei Chubarin. So one of them comes to the limud of Rabbi Yehuda, the Ikar limud that we're trying to get out of here, which is that it's his korban, not his father's korban that does smicha from. And the other one, he'll agree to the chachamim, that it comes to include all balei chubarim. Anybody who's a shutaf in a korban, he has to do smicha, not just one representative. So now the Gemara looks the other way. Rabbi Yehuda, hi, hamer yamir, mayav dilei. What does he do with the hamer yamir, the double lashon of the chachamim? So he violated the rabot et ha'isha. To say that a woman should be included in Tmura. Tatanya. Why would you think to exclude a woman from Tmura? Tatanya. The entire parsha of Tmura is written in the male formulation. So what are you going to say? If it's made in the male formulation, maybe a woman is excluded. In the end, we have to include a woman. Tamalomar, imhamer, yamir. A woman's included because of the ribuy alashon. Come back to this in 1 second. Rabbanan. Learn out ve'im. So the extra vav in ve'im, they learn out that a woman is included. But you the ve'im lo darish. It's not darish that vav. The Tosafot asks the basic question. Most of the Torah is written in the male formulation, and even in Hebrew, when you deal with plural, even if you're dealing with male and female, it's conjugated in the male form. So why is it over here? All of a sudden we say it's written in the male form, a female is excluded and a keva is excluded. We have a principle throughout the Torah that Ishva Torah, Ish Lisha, L'cholon Shim Shiva Torah. Any negative precept in the Torah, men and women are considered to be equal. There is no distinction between man and woman. So why all of a sudden over here are you going to say, oh, it's written in Lashon Zachar, we should exclude a woman? Because we would have thought throughout the Torah, Hishva Ish L'Isha. But over here, by the Korban, we have a reason to believe that Isha should be excluded rather than included in Tmura. Because here, Aval Hacha writes in the Gemara in Tmura, Kevin, the onish eno shave bakohu. It's a punishment that is not equal throughout, because it's not ein atzibur v'ashutafim osim tmura. So we have a distinction that is drawn in tmura between yichidim, individuals, and either partners or atzibur. Partners and atzibur are unable to create tmura, transfer the kedusha from this to another animal, whereas yichidim, individuals, are. So the principle that we lay out with regards to women is that women are equal to men, l'chol onshin shebatorah, for all punishments in the Torah. That's only when the punishments are equal throughout. They have a generic or flat punishment structure, which is that everybody and anything would get it. Over here, since by tmura it's not a flat structure, meaning that there are yechidim who get it, but the tzibur, shutafim, would not be in violation. Therefore, we thought maybe Isha is also excluded because it's written in Lashon Zachar. Therefore, we need the ripoy by a woman to include her by Tmura. Right now, the Gemara moves on to Hakol Chayavim B'Sukkah. Everyone is Chayav in Sukkah. Letuye Mai. What does that come to include? Letuye Katan Sheinu Tzarich Li'imo. It comes to include the position of Beit Hillel, which is that a Katan who no longer needs his mother, which the definition of is when he wakes up from his sleep, it doesn't call mommy, mommy. That's the definition of a katan, shein tzarech l'imo. He is already chayav b'sukkah. He's already chayav to be in the sukkah. Hakol chayavim b'lulav. Everyone is chayav in lulav. L'tuye mai. What does that come to include? L'tuye katan hayodeya l'na'aneya. Comes to include a katan who knows how to shake the lulav. So the qualification of chinuch for a young child who is growing up and you want to give him a lulav to use, the father is obligated, midrabanan, to already give the child a lulav once he knows how to be menaneya, once he knows how to shake the lulav. Titna, we have a mishnah, katana yodela naneya, chayav, bilulav. Akol chayavim betzitzit. Everyone is chayav in tzitzit. Lotuye mai, what does that come to include? Lotuye katan hayodea lihitatev. Comes to include a katan who knows how to wrap himself properly. Titzanya, we have a braita from Minachot, katan hayodea lihitatev, chayav in tzitzit. A katan who knows how to put on a talit properly is chayav in tzitzit. So let's just take a small look at this. First of all, what does it mean, hayodea lihitatev? That we know from the Gemara with regards to Avelut. The Gemara there says, "Ein atifa elik atifat ha'ishmaelim." The only proper atifa that can be done is atifat ha'ishmaelim, which means the equivalent of a kfiya of the Arabs that they wear. That's atifat ha'ishmaelim. So if you wear that headdress, the way to do atifa for avelut is the way that the Arab headdress is worn. Everyone then says, "Well, if you require atifa by tzitzit or by talit, it must be that the atifa, as the Gemara says, ein atifa elik atifat ha'ishmaelim." Which means, ad sfamam, until your mustache area. That's where you have to do a tifa when it comes to talit. Most people do this, is that they pull the talit over their head, and the top of the talit reaches to above their mouth. But that means that their eyes are covered, and they pull the talit over, and then they wrap it around them. Rav Avadya Yosef writes very strongly in a tshuva that he thinks this is wrong, and he says, one of the very funny lines in there, he says, you've never seen any Arab walking around looking silly with his eyes covered and bumping into walls. That's not how they wear their headdress. When we say they wear a headdress up to their mustache, that's from the bottom up, not from the top down. Nobody covers their eyes with their headdress. They cover their mouth, not their eyes. They need their eyes to see. And therefore, he argues very strongly and very convincingly, the way to do atifa with talit is to wrap the talit around one's neck and have it reach up to the mustache area, not come down over the eyes. The way to do that would be to pull your talit over your head till the, where you'd wear it when your head's covered up to the front of your hairline. Then to pull all the tzitzit up like a scarf, the way you would have a scarf, coming down the two sides in the front like a scarf. Then you would take the right side of that scarf and throw it over your left shoulder. And then you throw the left part of the scarf over your left shoulder as well. And that would create the atifa that you're looking for. It would come across your face. The right side is coming across your face, the scarf. And then they're all thrown over your left shoulder. There's a lot of midrashim that he brings down to show why that should be that way and why it goes to the left side and so on and so forth. But then if you do that, you look very much like you're wearing an Arab headdress over your mouth. And that's the proper way to do atifa when it comes to atifa tzitzit. And we make the bracha on talit of litatef bat tzitzit. So now again, the requirement for a katan is litatef. So Tosafot asks over here, we know there's a machloket in the Gemara Menachot as to what the obligation of tzitzit is. Is it chovat agavra or chovat mano? Is it a din in the person, or is it a din in the beged? I mean, if you have arba kanfot in your drawer, do they have to have tzitzit on them or not? If you believe it's chuvat amana, the answer is yes. If you believe it's chuvat agavra, then only when you wear it are you obligated to put on tzitzit. So he says that even though the Gemara here says that the requirement is lihita teif, nevertheless, that might not indicate that the din is like chuvat gavra, that it's only when you wear it are you chayav, because here it seems to be giving you an indication of when you're chayav is when you wear it, when you do hatifa. Tosfot says that there might just be a requirement of when a katan can do it. Even if it's a chuvat amana, the beged of a katan would only require tzitzit if he knows how to do atifa. So that is, he says this requirement doesn't necessarily prove it. On the other hand, he brings from the Bahag, that the Bahag says, you know how I know that the halacha is that it's chuvat agavra based on the bracha that we make. Lihita teif batzitzit. The fact that you make a bracha on lihita teif batzitzit is an indication that wearing it is the obligation. Atifa is the obligation, and therefore it's a chuvat agavra, the way we paskin, that the obligation is only when you're wearing arba kanfot do you require tzitzit. Tosafot over here addresses a very interesting issue, which is, we know, as far as tzitzit are concerned, you're only required to wear tzitzit when you have arba kanfot. If you don't have arba kanfot, you don't have to wear tzitzit. So there's a Gemara that brings a story in Menachot that Rav Katina did not wear tzitzit, because he wore a beged during the summertime and the wintertime that did not have arba kanfot, therefore he was never wearing tzitzit. So he bumps into a malach, and the malach tells him, what is this? What type of joke is this, that you're doing all these tachpulot, these tricks, never to be chayav and tzitzit? So Rav Katina asks him, why, what's the problem? If you're not chayav, then what's the problem? Do you get punished for not doing it? So the Gemara brings the malach answer to him, be'idan deritcha. When Hashem is angry, he punishes on the lack of doing an asay. If someone tries to get out of doing an asay, Hashem punishes for that when he's angry. When it's a bad time, when Hashem is letting out his anger, he punishes even on that issue. So from that, all the Rishonim conclude that even though you don't have a four-cornered beged, it's kedai to get a four-cornered beged and put on tzitzit. If you look in the Rambam, in the end of Hilchot Tzitzit, he writes about this, a little more agadic explanation of the importance of wearing tzitzit and the value of wearing tzitzit. Over here, Tosafot draws a distinction, a very, very interesting distinction. He says, depends when you live. In their time, where all their begagim were made out of four arba kanfot, and someone who did not have a four-cornered beged was clearly trying to get out of wearing a four-cornered beged. Over there, you get punished if you don't do it. Because the reason that you don't have a four-cornered beged is because you made sure to do something to obviate the need to put on tzitzit here. You rounded out a corner. You did something that changed it from being a four-cornered beged. Today, he says, we don't wear four-cornered begadim. You'd have to go out and purchase a four-cornered beged even to put on tzitzit, because it's just not what we normally wear. Over there, he says that even be'idan mitcha, you wouldn't get punished for that. No need to wear tzitzit whatsoever. This is against many of the Rishonim. Ibn Ezra writes it in Chumash. We know that it was widespread in the time of Tosafot in the Middle Ages that people did not wear tzitzit and did not wear tefillin. They didn't wear a tefillin because the original mitzvah was to wear tefillin all day, and people clearly didn't have the ability or capabilities of wearing them all day, and therefore they stopped wearing them altogether. Tzitzit was the same thing. No four-cornered beggars, nobody wore tzitzit. Most of the Rishonim rail against this, talk about the importance of wearing tzitzit and putting on tefillin, developed the Armin Hug of only putting on tefillin for davening. That's to deal with that issue of people not wearing them all day. And number two is to wear tzitzit, to buy a four-cornered beggar and put on tzitzit. So you can find that. You can see it in the Ibn Ezra, Tosafot, and other places. Not here, but the Menachot discusses this issue as well. But over here, he has an interesting view that it's only true, this problem of trying to escape putting on tzitzit, it's only true when normally you wear four-cornered begadim and you're escaping it. But when nobody wears four-cornered begadim, you don't have to go out of your way to wear one. So that's a different view of this issue of putting on tzitzit when you're not obligated. Next one is, Hakol chayavin bitfilin. Everyone's chayavin tefillin, letui mai, letui katan, al-yudei lishmor tefillin. The qualification by tefillin for chinuch is that he knows how to watch his tefillin. Titania, katana yodei lishmor tefillin. Once a katan knows how to watch over his tefillin, aviv lokeach lo tefillin. Now watching over the tefillin is not just simply keeping them and not losing them, but it means to lishmor otam b'tara b'machshava tehara. That you have proper thoughts, and that your bodily functions are also kept in check. Therefore, he knows how to wear a tefillin. What's interesting over here is that by the other issues, like lulav, tzitzit, it says that he's chayav in tzitzit. He's chayav in lulav. Also over here, it says, aviv lokeach lo tefillin. Why is it over here it say buy him tefillin, whereas by lulav and tzitzit, it doesn't say the father buys him a tzitzit, buys him a lulav. So Tosafot gives two answers. One answer is that by tefillin, you need a separate pair of tefillin for each person to put on, and therefore you have to buy it for him. By lulav, you could give him your lulav to use. when it comes to tzitzit, you can give him one of your begadim to wear. That's a possibility that you could share. But by tefillin, it's really hard to share if you're davening at the same time, if you're together. That's one. The other one, Tosfot says, it has to do with the price. By lulav and tzitzit, those are not so expensive. Therefore, we don't talk about buying it. By tefillin, which are extremely expensive, then we talk about lokeach. He's really got to purchase them. It's a significant purchase. Since it's a significant purchase, it says lokeach with regards to tefillin. All right, next one is, hakol chayavin biri'iyah. Everyone is chayav in riyah. This comes from Masechet Chagigah. It's the first Mishnah in Chagigah. That everyone is chayav in riyah. Rashi over there claims, hakol chayavin biri'iyah means, mitzvat riyat kol zuchurcha. To appear in the Mikdash, to Hashem. Shetzuchim lehit ra'ot bazarat baregel. That one has to appear in the azarah on the regel. That's why Rashi on Daf Bet in Chagigah mentions it. There is a Rashi on Daf Dalet Amud Bet that seems to indicate otherwise in Chagigah. Tosafot, over there and as well as over here, takes issue with that explanation of Rashi and says that there's no threshold for appearing in the Azara. Even a little kid is brought by their parents to the Azara to be seen by Hashem. There is no threshold like that. So the Hakol over here, Hakol Chayabim Biri'iyah, the Riyah that we're speaking about here is to bring a Korban. That when you appear in the Azara, that you have to bring a Korban with you to appear in the Azara. So that's the way Tosafot explains it. As opposed to Rashi, who says it's to simply your appearance in the Mikdash. So now we say, Hakol Chayavim Biri'iyah Letuye Mai. Mai says, Letuye Mish Chetzio Eved V'Chetzio Ben Chorin. This includes someone who is half free and half an Eved. This happens when an Eved was owned by two owners. One owner freed him, the other owner did not free him. So now he's half Eved, half Ben Chorin. Ule Ravina Damar Mish Chetzio Eved V'Chetzio Ben Chorin Patur Min Ariyah. We have a memra from Ravina and Amora who says that a person who is half Eved, half Ben Chorin does not have to go up for Riyah. Then what are you going to say? Le'atuye, chiger b'yom rishon v'nit pashet b'yom sheni. Someone who was lame, was limping on day one, and then got better on day two of the Chag. So even though he did not do Riyah, was not chayav on Riyah on the first day, nevertheless, on the second day where he now, his limp is gone, he does have to appear before Hashem in the Azara, according to Tosafot, bring up a Korban. That works well according to the one who says that every day is an independent chiyuv of Ri'iyah. Every day of the Chag, when you talk about the 7 days of Pesach, the 7 days of Sukkot, then each day independently has a chiyuv to appear. And each one is a tashlumim to the day before. Elamandamar kulan tashlumim l'rishon, there is a mandamar that there's only one obligation, that's day one. Every other day of the Chag, the remaining 6 days of the Chag, make up for the first day. And also Shmini Atzeret would also possibly be Tashlumim the Rishon, depending on what you think the status of Shmini Atzeret is. So Tuyemai. So then what are you going to come to include? It can't be. If on the first day he was a Chider, then he's Patur from Ri'iyah the whole Chag. Because on day two is only a makeup for day one. If you weren't Rali on day one, you never became Chayav. Then you can't be Chayav the whole Chag. So what's Latuye? Latuye Suma Bachat Me'enav. Does it include someone who is blind in one eye? Otoloki Aitana. And not like this Tana, the Tanya, Yochanan ben Dehavai Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Suma Bachat Menav Patur Min Ariyah. Shnemar, because the Pasuk says, Yira'eh. How to read this? I'll just read you the Gemara, and then I'll come back and explain it. Kederek Shabali wrote, Kach Balei Ra'ot. Just like he comes to see, he also comes to be seen. Mali wrote Bishteinav, just like he sees with two eyes, Afle wrote Bishteinav, so too he comes to be seen with two eyes. So now that explanation is a machloket Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam in the beginning of Chagigah. Rashi reads it as, the Pasuk says that there's an obligation to appear before Hashem, Yira'eh kol zuchurcha lifnei Adon Hashem. The Yira'eh spelled Yud Resh Aleph Hei. If I didn't have Nikudot there, I would have read it, Yira'eh. Yira'eh means to see, rather than Yira'eh, to be seen. So the drasha, according to Rashi, is this. Yira'eh, Yira'eh. It's basically the Mesoret versus Diktiv. Diktiv spells Yira'eh. The Mesoret spells Yira'eh. So that's what the Gemara says. It's Yira'eh, Kemo, Yira'eh. And now, Ma Lirot Bishteinav. The way Rashi explains this, the derech sheba lirotcha, kachu ba lirot mimcha, just like Hashem sees you with his two eyes, Hashem wants to be seen by the two eyes of the individual. So the way Rashi means that Yireh refers to Hashem, that Hashem sees you with two eyes, Malir Ot Mishteinav, just like Hashem sees you with his two eyes, Af Leirei Ot Mishteinav, so too he expects you to see him with your two eyes. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Rabbeinu Tam takes issue with Rashi's reading for two reasons. One is that it says over here that you come, Haba, that you come. First of all, only human beings come to see the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah doesn't come to see human beings, so the Shekhinah is found everywhere. So you can't speak about Hashem as coming to see you with his two eyes. Because he doesn't come, you come, he doesn't come. That's one issue. The second issue is the drasha. Well, the first way I would have read it is k'tiv, the way it's written, which is yireh. The second way I would have read it is yireh, based on the mesoret. So the way it should work is that I first deal with the k'tiv, and then the mesoret. According to Rashi, it's written the upper way around. Because I'm dealing with yireh first, and then yireh afterwards. Yireh means to be seen. Just like Hashem comes to see you with his two eyes, Yireh, you comes to see Hashem with two eyes. He says that you're learning the drasha backwards. And therefore the Rabbeinu Tam says that the drasha is just the opposite. That it works out like this. And I'll read you the Rabbeinu Tam from Chagiga. He says, Yireh, Yireh. Now the question of how he reads it. The Bach says he reads it as Yera and Yira. Whatever it is. Ma, lirot, b'shnei adam, shadam, bad lehit, ra'ot, lefnei amakom, b'shnei adam. Person appears before Hashem, seen with the two eyes of Hashem. Af adam, bad lirot, amakom, just like a person who comes to see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'shnei enav. So too, the person has to come to see Hashem with his two eyes. So the Rabbeinu Tam speaks to Hashem in different terms. That's the difference between him and Rashi. Rashi says that with regards to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem comes to see you with his two eyes, therefore you have to appear to see him with your two eyes. Peretav says Hashem doesn't come to see you. And number two is, Hashem is not the beginning of the pasuk, the Yireh. The Yireh is you appearing and coming to see. So the answer is, he says, it's just like you appear with your two eyes before Hashem to be seen by Hashem's two eyes, so too, you must see Hashem with your two eyes. It's a little bit of a nuance, but different than Rashi. And explain, first of all, Hashem is not the one coming. You're the one who's coming. You're the one who's appearing to be seen by Hashem's two eyes. And therefore, you must also see Hashem with your two eyes. In the end, same result, but a little different methodology for getting there. Again, it's a machloket in the first daf in Chagiga. The Rabbeinu Gershom, here in our Gemara, brings something down similar to the position of the Rabbeinu Tam in Chagiga. You can look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, says, Diktiv Yireh, Vikrina, and Yireh. Ma ba lirot HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shu ro'eh lo'olei regalim, Hashem sees the olei regalim kamim, b'shtei enav. Just like you appear before Hashem, and Hashem sees you with his two enayim. Af otan shibayin lira'ot, those that appear to be seen, yechazu b'vet enayim, they should see both their eyes. He does bring Igat Amre. He brings down another opinion, which is also somewhat mentioned in the Shita Mikubetzet, which is, we learn it out from Hashem Yera'eh, the Har Hashem Yera'eh, that's written by Avram Avinu in the Akedah. Klomar, yir'et ha'makom v'et ha'bayim sham, v'yera'eh l'bayim sham. That one appears before Hashem and the others that are there, and he has to be visible to them and they visible to him. He has to see everything that's going on in the Har Hashem Yera'eh. When you appear there, and therefore the Yera'eh is your appearance before Hashem and others, as well as other people's ability to see you. And therefore the Shita says, Ma lirot b'shtei enav, diktiv l'chol mar'ei enei ha'kohen. The way the Kohen sees with his eyes. So therefore you have to appear, and it's dealing with human beings and not Hashem. It's an alternative version or way to read that Gemara, but the two main opinions are Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam, and we explained the Rashi, and here the Rabbeinu Gershom seems to bring an opinion that's quite similar to that of the Rabbeinu Tam in Chagiga. V'ibay Teima, another way to answer is, L'olum da tuyei mi shechetzu ever chetzu ben chorin. But the kakashloch, the Ravino, what about the fact the Ravino says that a chetzu ever chetzu ben chorin doesn't have to do or bring a du ri'iyah? Lokasha, kam b'mishna rishona, kam b'mishna achrona. It's actually a machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. What you do with someone who's half an Evan and half a Ben Chorin. And then in the end, Beit Hillel changed their mind and agreed with Beit Shammai. And that is the Tanan. Mishechetzu Evan uchetzu Ben Chorin uvedet rabu yom echad betatzmo yom echad. Person who's a half Evan, half Ben Chorin, he works one day for the master that he's still enslaved to, and he works one day for himself because he's a free man. Divrei Beit Hillel. Amru lahem Beit Shammai tikantam et rabu. He took care of his master, but you left him in a bad position. Why? Can't marry a maidservant. He can't marry a shivcha knanit because the side of him that is free is restricted from marrying a shivcha knanit. Bat chorin en yachol. Yivatel. So what? Now don't get married. Hello, lo nivra olam, elo lepiriya revya. The world is only created for people to get married and procreate. It's a fundamental mitzvah of the Torah, shenemar, lo tov vira'a l'shevet yitzara. The world was not created to be left barren, but rather, l'shevet yitzara. Hashem created it to be inhabited and to expand. So therefore, there's an obligation on every individual to procreate. The question of how this pasuk relates to piriya rivya is a subject of a Tosafot and other Rishonim in other places, as well as this obligation, the Minchat Chinuch deals with this in the first mitzvah in the Torah, whether this obligation is only on Jews or includes non-Jews because of the lo tuvra, the shevet yitzara, might be different than the mitzvah of piriya or rivya. So not to get into depth, I'm just mentioning these issues. Therefore, what is this ever going to do? Ella, hipnei tikkun olam. Because of tikkun olam, kufin et rabo v'soto ben chorim. We force the second master to free him and give him an IOU letter. V'kutev shtoch et yo damo. He says, I owe you the money to be freed by you. So we take care of the Eved, we free him entirely, and he writes a shtar that says that I owe you the money for freeing me. V'chazru beit hillel orot k'direi beit shammai. In the end, Beit Hillel changed their mind and acquiesced to the position of Beit Shammai. So Mishnah Rishonah is when there's still Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Mishnah Achronah is when Beit Hillel agrees to the position of Beit Shammai. So therefore, by Mishnah Rishonah, whenever Beit Hillel still argued with Beit Shammai, then this Eved, Chetzu Ben Chorin, was still classified as an Eved, and therefore he's Patur from Miriyah. Only if he's totally free does he go up for Riyah, because there's a requirement that you only have one Adon, you get up to the Mikdash. There can only be one master, the master being Hashem. If you have another master over you, you're not Chayav in Riyah. That's the position of Ravina. The Mishnah Achrona, when Beit Hillel rescinded their opinion and agreed to the position of Beit Shammai, then even if he's still Chetzu Eved, Chetzu Ben Chorim, he's classified as a Ben Chorim. Because we're going to free him. We're going to take care of him no matter what. We're going to force him to be freed. So therefore he's classified as a free individual, even if he's still a Chetzu Eved, Chetzu Ben Chorim. So if you hear, even though he has an IOU to one of the masters, because he has to pay him for that freedom, nevertheless, he's free in terms of his movement. He can go wherever he wants. And since he can go up to Yerushalayim by himself, he's considered his own master of his destiny. And therefore he can appear before Hashem. And that's what the Mishnah says, Akol Chayavim Biriyah, based on the rescinding of, or the changing of Beit Hillel's opinion to agree with Beit Shammai. And therefore, Akol Chayavim Biriyah includes a Chetzu Eved, Chetzu Ben Chorin, because he's really classified as a Ben Chorin. Kol Chayavim B'Tkiyat Shofar, everyone is Chayav B'Tkiyat Shofar, L'Tuyei Mai. What does that come to include? L'Tuyei Katan Shigia L'Chinuch. Katan that reaches the age of Chinuch. Now what is a Katan Shigia L'Chinuch? Now the Gemara in Yoma says, gives different age groups for that. It means either 8 and 9 or 9 and 10. Gives different groupings of ages for chinuch. So Rashi quotes that over here and says that's what we're talking about. Katan gil chinuch. Tosafot takes issue with that and says that's only with regards to fasting. That's for fasting for hours, a certain amount of hours during the day. That's what the Gemara in Yoma is speaking about. That's not speaking about chinuch in general. You can see that from our Gemara over here. Because you see that by lulav, by tzitzit. By all of these items, there's a specific threshold for age, when he knows how to be mitatef, he knows how to be minaneya. So same thing over here, when it comes to shofar, skatan shegiyah lechinuch, is not a fixed age, but rather the age when a person understands the mitzvah of shofar. Someone who can understand or gets a grasp of the mitzvah of shofar, the meaning of the shofar, that's when they are of the proper age. Titznan, ein makvim et katan litkoa b'yom tov. One does not stop a youngster from blowing the shofar on Yom Tov, even though it's quote-unquote a klei shir. Nevertheless, we don't stop them because they are below the age of chinuch. But once they reach the age of chinuch, then we would stop them from blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah or even on Shabbat, because they have reached an age where they have to understand the meaning of the shofar. And since they're chayav in the mitzvah, we won't let them play around with the shofar. Kol chayavim v'mikra megillah. Everyone is chayav v'mikra megillah. Hakol k'shirim likrot at the megillah. Anyone can read the megillah. Letuyei mai. Where does that come to close? Like tuyei nashim. To include women. Shechayavot v'mikra megillah. Number one, they're kasher to read the megillah. Number two, Bez Rashi points out, Sherot Likrota Lotzi Zechari Midechotam. They can even read it from men. Because of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim Chayavot Mikra Megillah, they are obligated Mikra Megillah, Af Hein Ayu Ba'oto Anes. Because they were also included in the danger of destruction in Shushan and the Persian Empire. And since they were equally saved, they have the same obligation as men. And therefore a woman could read the Megillah on behalf of a man. So that would seem to me from the Gemara, it's very straightforward. The problem is that there is a Bahag, which changes all of this, and creates most of the problems with regards to women reading Megillah for a man. Which is that the Bahag lo pasak, hachi.
Bahag does not pass like this, but rather like a Tosefta. There's a Tosefta that suggests that women are
Peturot from Mikra Migilah.
And the distinction the Bahag draws is that there is an obligation on women to Shmia, to hear the Megillah, but there is no obligation of women to read the Megillah. There are two distinct mitzvot. There's a mitzvah to hear the Megillah, and there's a mitzvah to read the Megillah. When it comes to males, to men, they are obligated in both reading the Megillah and hearing the Megillah. Women, on the other hand, only have one obligation of those two, and that's to hear the Megillah, not to read the Megillah. And based on that, the Bahag says that women can be motzi other women, because they're on the same level of obligation, which is, they both only have an obligation to hear the Megillah. On the other hand, a woman may not read the Megillah for a man because she has a different form of obligation. She only has an obligation to hear, not to read. Whereas the man has an obligation to read, and therefore he can only be yotze with someone who's on an equal level of obligation from another male. Based on this Bahag, which is brought down the halacha, the mainstream halacha, we're choshesh for this Bahag. Therefore, a woman cannot read for a man Megillah because of this problem of the Bahag, of the distinction between Shmiah and Kriyah, which really develops because of the stira between our Gemara and the Tosefta. So the distinction he draws is the difference between the mitzvah of Shmiah and the mitzvah of Kriyah. Now, based on that, there are some other issues which rise in terms of the bracha, that if a woman reads the Megillah, should she really say Al Mikra Megillah versus Al Shmiat Megillah? Because, according to the Bahag, there is no mitzvah of Mikra Megillah for a woman. So that is another discussion in the poskim with regards to women reading the Megillah. Over here, the Bahag quotes stories of Yeshua Ava Maknis Kolan Shebeto Bekar Lifnehem. Yeshua brought his whole house together, his whole household together to read them. You say intend to read it before the women in his household. Everyone was in the danger of being destroyed. And everyone's chayav to hear the Megillah. So the Halacha Gedolah brings examples of Chachamim that read the Megillah on behalf of their household. But again, the obligation he determines is only about Shmi'ah, not about the issue of Kri'ah. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow.